Chapter 3. Your Excuse Catalog. Quote, I know of no more encouraging fact than the unquestionable ability of man to elevate his life by a conscious endeavor. Unquote. That's Henry David Thoreau from Walden. I personally have an undeniable affinity for Henry David Thoreau's experience while communing with nature at Walden Pond in Massachusetts. I visited his home in Concord on many occasions, meditated at his desk, and actually rested on his bed to enhance this magical connection. The quote above is so meaningful to me that it actually influenced my writing of the book that you are listening to. I've occasionally been accused of being a Pollyanna, offering hope to the hopeless. Some see my philosophy concerning the human ability to elevate life to higher levels of peace, love, and joy to be naive. Being compared to Pollyanna isn't a source of discomfort for me, however. After all, here was a little girl who arrived in a town where the people were miserable and pessimistic, with doom and gloom dominating the horizon. Within a short while, the energy of Pollyanna permeated the community. Her enthusiasm was infectious, and people began to feel hope, passion, and love, replacing their despair and futility. So if I'm to be compared to anyone, I find it an honor to be viewed in Pollyannish terms. I think that many of Mr. Thoreau's contemporaries might have applied a similar label to him as well. Thoreau left the corrupt world of humankind to live in the natural world, with trees, animals, and the weather as his teachers. He discovered an ecstatic awareness of a current of life coursing through the entire planet, which led to his optimism about human potential. His message is essentially this. Realize the existence of the unknowable and ecstatic aspect of your existence. Know that this divine element is an intrinsic part of yourself. Begin trusting your underlying nature by becoming conscious. In other words, excuses be gone. There are four words in this chapter's opening quote that I want to highlight. Encouraging, unquestionable, elevate, and conscious. 1. This program is encouraging you to challenge patterns and feel inspired by a newfound awareness of the life hidden beneath your excuses. Invite yourself to move out of established thought patterns and realize that there's nothing standing in your way of living at your highest levels. 2. You have an unquestionable ability to eliminate excuses. They'll get up and go when they're revealed as the false beliefs that they are. There's simply no question about this. 3. You elevate your life by taking responsibility for who you are and what you're choosing to become. You can transcend the ordinary, the mundane, and average with thoughts of greater joy and meaning. You can decide to elevate your life rather than have it stagnate or deteriorate with excuses. Go beyond where you presently are. And 4, you can bring your desires to consciousness by disconnecting the power from your subconscious so that it can't continue to run your life. Your subconscious habitual mind is accessible, so unearth the excuses buried deep within you. Become conscious. Be encouraged by the unquestionable ability you have to elevate your life by a conscious endeavor. Remember these four words as you review the following list from some of the most common excuses that you probably like to free yourself from. A catalog of some common excuses. In my role as a counselor, teacher, and parent, I've heard many reasons that people use to explain an unhappy existence, and almost all of them inevitably fall into one huge category, which I call excuses. The rest of this chapter will introduce you to 18 of the most commonly used ones, along with a brief commentary about each of them. This will give you a brief primer before you go on to learn the excuses be gone method that's detailed in the rest of this program. Here they are in no particular order. Number 1, excuse. It will be difficult. While this may seem like a supportable reason, it's clearly an excuse designed to discourage you. If you're honest with yourself about the difficulty you're experiencing with addiction, obesity, depression, shyness, low self-esteem, loneliness, or any other life aspect, you'll recognize the useless suffering you're hanging on to. If it's going to be difficult anyway, why not opt for some useful suffering? Still, the fact is that you have absolutely no incontrovertible evidence that what you'd like to change is in fact going to be challenging. It's just as likely to be easy for you to change your thinking as it is to be hard. Decades ago, when I decided to give up smoking, for example, I used excuses begone beliefs. It was encouraging for me to realize how much more difficult it was to smoke than not to smoke.
The smoker part of me always had to have a pack of cigarettes and an ashtray within easy reach, had to carry matches or lighters, dispose of ashes, deal with smelly fingers and stained teeth, earn money to pay for this disgusting habit, be careful exhaling noxious fumes, cough up nicotine residue from my lungs, buy lighter fluids and flints, and on and on and on. The truth was that continuing to smoke was the real difficulty, and changing my habit involved one simple thing, not smoking. This is true for virtually all of your habits. The belief that they're going to be hard to change is only a belief. Making something difficult in your mind before you even undertake the effort is an excuse. Nothing in the world is difficult for those who set their mind to it, as an ancient Taoist master concluded. Excuse number two. It's going to be risky. Again, this may seem like a good reason, but if you convince yourself that something involves more risk than you're capable of assuming or have the strength for, this is a poor excuse for not taking action. What is unquestionable here is your ability to choose your beliefs about the drawbacks of this endeavor. Over the years, countless people have thanked me for taking so many risks and speaking out about what I believe so fervently. I'm always taken aback by such expressions of gratitude. I've never assumed that I was being courageous by speaking my mind. Even if my opinions and statements were certain to be perceived as offensive by large numbers of people, the idea that being myself and also being willing to speak my own truth involved taking a chance never occurred to me. I don't believe you can ever be 100% certain that something will be risk-free. Holding back in silence out of fear of retribution or criticism could easily be the most hazardous behavior. Speaking from the heart doesn't always mean critical fallout. After all, about 99% of the time, the feedback I receive is positive and heartwarming. The fear involved in anticipating a risk simply serves to keep you from taking action. When you convince yourself that it's your job to avoid taking chances, you can continue your familiar habits. If you're accustomed to playing it safe by attempting to please everyone you encounter, then you're a victim of your own excuse-making. The point is that if you fear the opinions of others, or if you fear failure or success, then anything that you think or do will involve some risk. But if you're willing to live from your convictions and fulfill your destiny, then what others perceive as taking chances are simply the ways you choose to elevate your life. Even if you do believe that changing the way you think will involve risk, so what? The peace you feel because you ignored the worry of a risk is far greater than staying stuck in a belief that is really only an excuse. As writer Logan Pearsall Smith once noted, quote, "What is more mortifying than to feel that you have missed the plum for want of courage to shake the tree?" Unquote. Excuse number three, it will take a long time. Is this a valid reason or an excuse not to proceed? If you wish to elevate your life, it really doesn't matter how long it takes, does it? And this is particularly true when you're conscious that you live your life, every single bit of it, in the present moment and only in the present moment. All you ever get is now. Every thought occurs in the present moment and every change has a defining moment. Often it takes something or someone outside of you to help you realize that. An entertaining psychiatrist named Dr. Murray Banks does just that with the following little exchange between himself and a woman who's decided not to return to school because she'd be too old when she's finished. Question, he asks her, how old would you be in 5 years if you got that degree by starting now, he asks her. 49, she replies. And how old will you be in 5 years if you don't go back to school? 49, she answers with the bewildered confusion of becoming conscious of making an excuse for not elevating her life. However long it took you to create any self-defeating habit, you did it all one day, one moment at a time. There's absolutely no proof that anything will take a long time, since even the idea of a long time is an illusion. There's only now. Make this awareness a part of your consciousness. The Tao Te Ching reinforces this in perhaps the most famous line in that masterful work, quote, "A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step," unquote. Elevate or move on in your life, not by thinking big and in long time periods, but with consciousness focused on the present moment. Excuse number four. There will be family drama. After spending many years as a family therapist, I've seen how people often become stuck in their habituated modes of thinking because they fear the criticism that could result if they change. And I receive so many phone calls on my weekly radio show on HayHouseRadio.com from individuals who insist on remaining stuck because of this excuse. When I encourage a shift in thinking, I regularly hear things like, I'd love to try what you suggest, but it would just kill my parents. Or, my family would disown me if I did that. It's just too big a price to pay. I've heard more than a few admit that if their spouse died, it would be an easier solution than making changes. Now, let me be very clear here. I believe in family. I have 8 beautiful children, a mother in her 90s whom I adore, and 2 brothers whom I love dearly, and I treasure my immediate and extended families. However, and this is a crucial point, living a life of your own choosing involves the unquestionable willingness to endure the slings and arrows that could come your way when you respond to your inner knowing rather than to the opinions of your family. Samuel Butler was probably feeling something similar when, toward the end of his life in 1902, he wrote, "I believe more unhappiness comes from this source than from any other. I mean, the attempt to prolong family connection unduly and to make people hang together artificially who would never naturally do so," unquote. You don't belong to your immediate family. You're a member of the human family. You don't own your children, nor are you a possession of your parents. You're not obliged to fulfill the wishes or a destiny dictated by kin. It's important to consciously know that you're here to create your music and that you don't have to die with your music still in you. Granted, this can trigger some family drama, but then again, that might be just your excuse for not following your own path. It's been my experience that I earn far more respect than reproach from my family whenever I encourage myself to live the life I want. To that end, these types of excuses need to disappear. I can't disappoint my grandparents or my parents. Why should I be the only one rebelling and wanting to move out of town, or take up a new occupation, or marry outside of our faith, or whatever else may incur disapproval and censure from relatives? These are thoughts or memes based on fears that were originally internalized in childhood, when they seemed the only way to secure a place in your tribe. Yet, what were reasons to the child you were then need to be recognized as excuses by the adult you are today. Don't let fear of family dramas keep you from changing outmoded, unnecessary, and unwanted thought patterns. Excuse number 5, I don't deserve it. In Revolution from Within, a book of self-esteem, Gloria Steinem writes that self-esteem isn't everything, it's just that there's nothing without it. I believe that lack of self-esteem is the basis for the I don't deserve it excuse I hear in sentences such as these. Nothing seems to work for me. I try, but nothing ever comes my way. I must not be worthy of it. And other people can get ahead, but I guess I'm not good enough to succeed. These excuses are based on a belief in the validity of your unworthiness. It's as if a part of you wants to protect you from what's assumed to be the unbearable pain of feeling that maybe they're right and I don't deserve it. If you ask that part of you why it's doing this, it will have good reasons. But those reasons are, in effect, lies, and functioning by their edict means that you're living a lie. You don't earn worthiness. You're equally as deserving of all that this glorious world offers as anyone else is. Believing that you're not good enough to have unlimited happiness, success, and health is a colossal fabrication that bears no resemblance to the truth of your life today. It keeps you discouraged with a well-intentioned excuse to protect you from taking action. But it isn't protecting you. It's preventing you from becoming conscious of your unquestionable worthiness. In the presence of now, this excuse has no place in your life. Excuse number 6, it's not my nature. The sentences cropping up in this category sound something like this. I've always been this way. I can't help it. I was born with these personality traits. I've never known any other way to think. And yep, it's my nature, so I'll just have to accept it. Earlier in this program, I explained my understanding of new research demonstrating that your genetic and mimetic heredity are capable of being altered. If you're willing to consciously endeavor to change the beliefs that support what you call your nature, you'll discover that it's not my nature excuse is now gone. I firmly believe that your intrinsic self is well equipped to help you fulfill your unique destiny. Just because you have no recollection of ever having been other than the way you are today, this isn't proof that your nature is unchangeable. To once again quote Henry David Thoreau, quote, "It is surprising how much room there is in nature if a man will follow his proper path," unquote. I take this to mean that nature itself will shift to accommodate you when you begin to know your unquestionable ability to elevate your life. Incorporate Thoreau's advice and begin to follow your own path. Recognize excuse logic that sounds like this. I've always been this way. It's just who I am. I'd like to change, but how can I change my own nature? It's all I've ever known, so I guess I'll just have to stay the way I am. Can you see how this kind of logic keeps you stuck in a lifelong thinking habit? The very fact that you've been a certain way throughout your life is a perfect reason for encouraging yourself with thoughts such as, I'm fed up with being frightened, shy, poor, unhappy, used by others, condescending, fat, or out of shape. It's all I've ever known, and it stems from the way I think and the beliefs I've come to accept as defining my nature. If this is my nature, then I'm going to change it, beginning right now. Now, these are notions that the philosopher Bertrand Russell could get behind. He wrote, quote, if human nature were unchangeable, as ignorant people seem to suppose it to be, the situation would indeed be hopeless. What passes as human nature is at most one-tenth nature, the other nine-tenths being nurture, unquote. So whatever you believe is your nature, allow it to be nurtured the way you'd like it to be, starting with excuses be gone. Nine-tenths of your nature has been learned and adopted as a habit, and you can coax those old habits down the stairs, one step at a time. Excuse number 7, I can't afford it. It's a rare day when I don't hear some variation of this excuse, including, I didn't go to college because it was too expensive, I haven't been able to travel because I never had the funds, and I couldn't get into the business I wanted because I had to stay where I was and earn money to pay the bills. I call this belief lame and a cop-out, yet there seems to be almost universal agreement for its existence. You originated in a world of abundance, which you unquestionably have the ability to access. Whenever you discourage yourself with thoughts that your financial situation is preventing anything from appearing, that's an excuse. If you instead decide to bring abundance awareness into your consciousness, you'll shift your thoughts from, I can't afford it, to, whatever I need in the form of assistance to guide me in the direction of my life is not only available, but it's on its way. You'll then consciously watch for the necessary funding to show up, but you'll also be reminding yourself to believe that you have the ability to use abundance to elevate your life. Encourage yourself by realizing that you have the capacity to create a space within you that's filled with peace and joy, an inner island of contentment that has nothing to do with money. Practice gratitude for the essentials of life, which are yours to enjoy virtually free of charge. These include air, water, fire, the sun and the moon, the very ground you walk on, the continuous beating of your heart, the inhaling and exhaling of your lungs, your food digesting, your eyes and ears, and so on. Be utterly grateful for all that you have naturally, which is beyond the scope of what's affordable. As that endeavor strengthens, assess what you truly like to do, where you'd like to live, and what creature comforts you desire. When I made the decision to attend college after spending 4 years in the military, for instance, I knew in my heart that money wasn't going to be the thing that prevented me from reaching my goals. I understood the costs involved, and I didn't act on my fear of shortage or what I couldn't afford. I acted on my internal knowing that I indeed was going to attend the university. This knowing prompted me to investigate financial assistance from the government as a veteran, open a savings account designated for tuition and books, talk with the financial aid people at the university, and make alternative plans to attend community college if Plan A were not to materialize. I had a certainty inside of me that the I can't afford it reasoning is an excuse that many people who aren't considered wealthy employ as a means for exonerating themselves when they need a rationalization for why they're stuck where they are in life. Oscar Wilde made this wry observation in 1891. There's only one class in the community that thinks more about money than the rich, and that is the poor. The poor can think of nothing else, unquote. I'd add that such thinking includes lamenting the fact that they'll never have money. I advise tossing out this meme and instead rewiring thoughts to connect with what's intended to manifest, regardless of your current financial status. Whatever you feel is your dharma, and no matter how hard that calling seems to be pulling you, if you maintain the belief that you can't manage to pull it off, I can assure you that you're right. To paraphrase Henry Ford, whether you believe you can afford to do a thing or not, you're right. Excuse number 8, no one will help me. This excuse really saddens me because there's no truth in it whatsoever. The fact is that the world is filled with people who would jump at a chance to help you with whatever you'd like to create. But if you hold on to a false notion that no one will be there to help you, your experiences will match that belief. If you spent way too much of your life overweight, seriously addicted, lost in poverty, or what have you, then you need to realize that the ball is in your court. No more excuses. Once that belief begins changing, you'll see help arriving. but the initial movement is completely in your thoughts. It begins with this new belief, I can access help. Begin encouraging yourself with affirmations that support and elevate your beliefs, such as, I have the capacity to create by myself if necessary. I know the right people to help me are here at the right time, and the world is full of people who would love to assist me. These will help to align you with the source of energy that's unquestionably available to your intuitive self. Elevate your confidence further with this journal entry made in November of 1843 by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Quote, if I have lost confidence in myself, I have the universe against me. Unquote. You are the universe. You originated from the invisible world of spirit. When you doubt yourself, you doubt the universal intelligence that you are, and it seems there's no one to help you. As an example from my own life, I repeat this thought from A Course in Miracles when I'm about to give a speech. Quote, if you knew who walked beside you at all times on this path that you have chosen, you could never experience fear or doubt again. Unquote. As I walk to the microphone podium, I remember that I'm an instrument for the words and ideas. My confidence trusts the wisdom that created me. In other words, I know that I am never alone. There's no one to help me becomes an invalid excuse. I affirm that all that is needed or required will be there, and I consciously encourage myself with this unquestionable belief. And help seems to come from all directions. The money I need somehow shows up, the right people emerge, and circumstances occur that are unexpectedly helpful, almost as if some synchronistic force steps in and bewilders me with the beauty of it all. I'm encouraged by my unquestionable power to elevate myself in any situation. Excuse number 9. It has never happened before. Be not the slave of your own past. This is what my literary soulmate Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote in his journal. Just because you've always been a certain way, this isn't a rational explanation for your present state of affairs. In fact, it's an excuse attempting to explain away what you feel are shortcomings. The past is a trail you leave behind, much like the wake of a speedboat. That is, it's a vanishing trail temporarily showing you where you were. The wake of a boat doesn't affect its course. Obviously, it can't, since it's only a trail behind the boat. So consider this image when you exclaim that your past is the reason you aren't moving forward. The logic of it's never happened before, or its equally debilitating corollary, it's always been that way for me, stems from these beliefs. My past is over, and what's over can't be changed. What happened before will happen again, so I'm being guided today by what can't be changed. Therefore, it's impossible for me to change. It's over for me. What I want has never happened before, and that means it will never happen again. Crazy logic. This is what happens when you live in the wake or the trail you've left behind, convinced that your past is the reason why you can't change. You hang on to it to excuse yourself from thinking differently. Consciously choose a new set of affirmations that encourage you to believe in your ability to elevate your life above past levels. Try this. I can accomplish anything I put my mind to here in the present moment. My past has no bearing on what I can and will create. If it has never happened before, that is all the more reason for me to make it happen now. I will cease being a slave to my past. Inventory the mental excuses you have for avoiding risk, failure, criticism, ridicule, or the negative opinions of others. See how you're creating them as the formation of your current excuse memes. Yes, I said memes. Those ideas placed in your head from mimicking the ideas of others until they became a set of mind viruses. When they're put to the 7-part excuses be gone paradigm in part 3 of this program, they'll simply crumble right before your eyes because they have no substance. I doubt this point could be better summarized than in the last lines of Carl Sandburg's poem, Prairie. Quote, I tell you, the past is a bucket of ashes. I tell you, yesterday is a wind gone down, a sun dropped in the west. I tell you, there is nothing in the world, only an ocean of tomorrows, a sky of tomorrows. End quote. Give up hanging on to that bucket of ashes. Recently, I spent an afternoon swimming with the dolphins in the Mexican Riviera. I'd never done such a thing in all of my 68 years, but rather than telling myself that I couldn't undertake such an outing because it's never happened before, I reversed the logic and instead thought, since I've never done this before, I want to add this to my repertoire and have this unique experience right now. And it was sensational. Adopt this kind of thinking regarding everything you've never done before. Open up to vistas that bring you to a new way of being where you create wealth, health, and happiness in the present moment. Excuse number 10. I'm not strong enough. The I'm not strong enough excuse unquestionably keeps you locked into a habituated way of thinking. Years spent believing in your weaknesses actually strengthens the belief that you aren't an emotionally, spiritually, or physically capable individual. It only takes a little bit of criticism to discourage you and activate this belief, I'm not a strong person, so I'll resort to my true self, who is weak. The idea that you aren't tough enough to hold a certain job, or stand up to a bully or victimizer, or take care of yourself, or face life alone, or travel by yourself, are all mind viruses that are ready excuses when life gets tough. This is true on a collective level as well. I spent a couple of years teaching American history with a special interest in colonial America. I was always intrigued by how the United States broke free from the small island on the other side of the ocean that had ruled it with an iron fist for so many years. The message that the British had always sent was, we are strong, and you, fledging wannabes, are weak. The result was a kind of servitude that had kept the colonists in excuse mode but was ultimately brought to a halt once and for all. The transformation required a paradigm shift, which ultimately resulted in new thinking habits. It began with that great assortment of founding fathers from north to south who challenged the mind virus that they were weak and the British were strong. When enough of these courageous leaders shared their beliefs about American might, the new meme began to replicate, infiltrate, and spread throughout the 13 colonies. In that vein, here's a portion of a speech delivered by Patrick Henry before the Second Revolutionary Convention of Virginia in 1775. Quote, we are not weak. If we make a proper use of those means which the God of nature has placed in our power, the battle, sir, is not to the strong alone, it is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. Unquote. Shift out of the mental belief that you're too weak. Become vigilant and active and demonstrate a new kind of bravery. Affirm that you're breaking free of thinking habits that have convinced you you're not a strong person. Here are some affirmation suggestions for you. I shall never see myself as lacking in strength again. What you think of me is none of my business. My strength is my connection to Source. It does not know weakness. Become conscious of the fact that seeing this belief as an excuse illuminates its weakness, but it also strengthens your ability to encourage yourself. You possess all the fortitude of character, mind, and body to live at the highest levels of happiness, health, and prosperity. Let these words of Mohandas Gandhi inspire you. Quote, strength does not come from physical capacity. It comes from an indomitable will. Unquote. Excuse number 11. I'm not smart enough. Your vast intelligence isn't measurable by an IQ test, nor is it susceptible to the analysis of school transcripts. Your ideas or beliefs about what you'd like to be, accomplish, or attract are evidence of your genius. If you're capable of conceiving it, then the act of visual conception combined with your passion for manifesting your idea into reality is all you need to activate your genius. If you think that it's impossible to categorize yourself as a genius, I emphatically ask, why not? You originated in the same infinite field of intention as everyone else who's ever lived. Your mind is a component of the mind of God or the universal Tao, so how could it be other than the brilliance of the Creator? Were you not created out of this vast sea of invisible intelligence? Are your ideas somehow inferior or incapable of being transformed into this material world? Even as a part of you hangs on to the I'm not smart enough excuse, there's a part of you that recognizes this truth. When you state, quote, I've never been smart enough, unquote, you're really saying, I've bought into a definition of intelligence that's measured by what family members or educators provided me with earlier in my life. You can provide yourself with encouraging input instead of the discouraging messages from your past by knowing that intelligence can never be measured, nor can it in any way be limited. So if you're willing to put your passion and perseverance into your ideas, you'll meet the genius part of you. Even if you subscribe to the idea that this excuse is warranted because your brain is somehow not up to par, consider the conclusion that Sharon Begley offers in her book, Train Your Mind, Change Your Brain. Here's what she says about the power of the brain, your brain, to change, not through prescription drugs, but through the will. Quote, the conscious act of thinking about one's thoughts in a different way changes the very brain circuits that do the thinking. Unquote. And, quote, the ability of thought and attention to physically alter the brain echoes one of Buddhism's more remarkable hypotheses, that will is a real physical force that can change the brain, unquote. So even if you want to hang on to the excuse that your brain is chemically deficient, you have within you the power to change its material makeup. You can rearrange your old thinking system so that it conforms with the genius model. Why not think that the ideas in your head are byproducts of your genius instead of a limited intelligence? Let what Oscar Wilde is said to have remarked to a New York City customs official encourage you. When asked if he had anything to declare, he responded, quote, "I have nothing to declare but my genius," unquote. And in many ways, he was absolutely correct. When you trust in yourself, you trust in the very wisdom that created you. Make a conscious effort not to second-guess that originating wisdom. Like Oscar Wilde, have only your genius to declare. Trust your elevated thoughts, especially those that stir up passion, and then act on them as if they were unquestionable. Excuse number 12, I'm too old, or I'm not old enough. The age of your body can seem to be quite an obstacle on the road to changing long-held thinking habits, particularly since you received an extensive list of memes concerning age very early on. Depending on where you grew up, you heard statements such as, you can't ride your bicycle until you're 7. You can't sleep over until you're 10. You can't drive a car until you're 16. And you can't have sex until you're married. Then at some point, you discovered that you went from being not old enough to being too old. Then you started to hear, you can't get a new job after age 35. You can't change occupations because you're past your prime. Or you can't fall in love again at your age. Or it's too late to write the book or compose the symphony you've always dreamed about. And of course, the old saw, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And all of these memes became your reality. The age excuse comes from an inclination to identify yourself with the number of trips you've made around the sun rather than from the unlimited side of you that lives independent of the age of your body. Part of you has an ageless mind and is quite oblivious to the physical aging process. And it's available to you if you'll just encourage it with conscious invitations to participate in your life. As a young child, you had daydreams about what you might invent or draw or write or design. Mind viruses came your way routinely, which made age your reality. Wait until you're bigger to do those kinds of things, seemed to be a never-ending pronouncement, all too quickly turning into, you're too old, act your age, it's too late. Somewhere between the two, your private destiny wasn't elevated to a primary position in your life. You are the age you are, period. Yet those thoughts swirling around inside and outside of your head are ageless. They have no form, no boundaries, no beginnings, no endings. When you speak of age, you speak of your body, this finite thing that houses your invisible essence. This excuse is all about your physical self, and it is unquestionably influenced by your mind. You're the perfect age right here in this moment, and your body can be no other age than what it is. Identify yourself in what Lao Tzu calls the subtle realm, or the invisible domain of spirit, with thoughts like these. I am ageless, and I can train my body to work with me in achieving anything I can conceive of in my mind. There's nothing about my age today that prohibits me from fulfilling my dreams. My mind is free, and I can train it to do my bidding rather than acquiescing to an excuse pattern. I've had two very persuasive callings in my life. One occurred when I knew I'd be pursuing a college education regardless of being the oldest freshman on campus. Age was of no consequence to me. In fact, the 8 years I spent as a student on several college campuses to earn my 3 academic degrees were accomplished in part because I was so unconcerned about my age. I was living my passion, and everything else took a back seat to that vision. My second huge calling came at the age of 65 years and one day. Compelled to detach myself from worldly possessions accumulated over many decades, I disposed of clothes, furniture, books, records, awards, photographs, and memorabilia of all descriptions. Studying and living the Tao Te Ching, I wrote an essay on each of the 81 verses in a book titled Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life. That I might be too old simply never occurred to me. As I look back on my life, I realize that I have made many smaller decisions where I refused to consider age as a factor. At the age of 42, I decided to become a long-distance runner and ran the original Greek Marathon. At the age of 17, I decided to write my first novel, and at the age of 9, I faked my age to get a paper route. 10 was the required age. At the age of 68, I can't conceive of thinking that I'm too old to do what I love. Without that excuse, I continue to live by activating my particular dharma or destiny. In fact, I just completed a brand new career undertaking as an actor and filmmaker at the tender age of 68. I encourage you to view the movie called The Shift, and tell me. Write to me and tell me if you think I'm too old for such a project. Excuse number 13. The rules won't let me. Perhaps the most famous of Henry David Thoreau's observation is this one from the conclusion of Walden. Quote, if a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer, unquote. Thoreau was referring to the unlikelihood of being able to always march to the same beat as everyone else. There are times in your life when you have to listen to the rhythm of rules that are beating within you, and only you, instead. But perhaps you've latched onto a belief that the rules of society are so sacrosanct that bending them would be crossing a line that you or anyone should never cross. The words that follow the above sentence in Walden are even more compelling for living an excuses be gone life. Quote, let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away, unquote. I'm not making a case for being a lawbreaker just for the sake of nonconformity. I am encouraging you to give up habituated behavior that demands following the rules and obeying laws when this keeps you from fulfilling your destiny. Bertrand Russell observed that, quote, from childhood upward, everything is done to make the minds of men and women conventional and sterile, unquote. This includes many of the edicts, both written and spoken, that you've been taught to observe as you move through life. Many of these rules are simply the shoulds. You should do things the way we've always done things in this family. You should keep quiet and do as you're told. You should fit in and take the courses that the school offers. You should take the advice of authorities rather than have a different opinion. You should want to continue living near family instead of moving across or out of the country, and so on. All of these shoulds are designed to keep you from hearing a certain drumbeat, which, if further ignored, may lead to disastrous results. Thoughtless obedience to rules and laws is both dangerous to society as a whole and an impenetrable obstacle in the way of your health and happiness. You see, your subconscious mind may be so programmed that you allow all of these memes or mind viruses to dictate your opinions in life. If you recognize that you're a spokesperson for always obeying rules and laws and doing as you're told, you also need to recognize that you pass on mind viruses to others similar to the ones that are curtailing your own life. Some of the most heinous acts in human history have been performed under the umbrella of the law and the rules, and many beliefs and opinions are merely excuses defended as rules or laws. Listen to your own heart and obey whatever is consistent with what you know to be the highest law of all. Subscribe to edicts that encourage you and others to be all that you're capable of becoming without interfering in any way with anyone else's God-given rights. In this excuses-begone attitude, you'll never be limited by laws, rules, or shoulds. As the 18th verse of the Tao Te Ching states, quote, when the greatness of the Tao, or God, is present, action arises from one's own heart. When the greatness of the Tao, or God, is absent, action comes from the rules of kindness and justice. Let the greatness of the Tao live in your heart and encourage you to act from that elevated place. Excuse number 14, it's too big. The it's too big excuse is so big that it seems to plop on top of people and totally immobilize them. Perhaps surprisingly, this belief only needs to be reversed. If you believe that people are successful because they think big, for instance, I'm here to tell you that success demands small thinking. Bring this realization into your consciousness and you will have accessed the ability to think small and act on what only once seemed to be big issues. Some of these include being overweight, battling an addiction to legal or illegal substances, having an unwanted self-image, earning your PhD, building your new house, getting out of debt, fixing your relationship with your mother, or becoming more self-reliant. Verse 63 of the Tao clearly and gently explains what I'm talking about. Quote, take on difficulties while they are still easy. Do great things while they are still small. The sage does not attempt anything very big, and thus achieves greatness, unquote. These words may appear to be paradoxical, but they're the unquestionable response to this particular excuse. As I was writing this in the book, there was a 12-story structure being erected next door to my condo building. Admittedly, there had to be some big thinking on the part of those who imagined and designed this project. However, the actual creation of this beautiful new edifice is being accomplished in terms of what can be done right here, right now. One step, one brick, and one shovelful of dirt at a time. What a great metaphor to touch base with when you feel overwhelmed by the sheer scope of something. You cannot lose 50 pounds, or quit smoking in a single day, or get your PhD tomorrow, or eliminate all debt from your life forever. Such goals are too big when approached that way, and this makes it too easy to fall back into habituated ways. The Excuses Be Gone method invites you to challenge your thought patterns and encourage your own success. So acknowledge that you can't get the humongous things done today, but you can take that first step. While you can't receive your PhD today, you can register for a course that begins next week, and that's all you can do regarding that lofty goal for now. Think small and accomplish what you can in the here and now. You can't quit drinking alcohol or smoking cigarettes for the next 10 years, but you can refuse to give in to your addictions today, or even smaller, in this moment. That you can do. And that is precisely how all habituated thinking habits get changed, by thinking and acting small in the now moment, and living the only way that anyone really does live, 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. With this new consciousness, you can begin thinking in terms that encourage you to eliminate excuses and elevate success. Excuse number 15. I don't have the energy. Not having the vitality to fulfill your life purpose is part of a learned response. I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I'm worn out, and I'm too weary are just a few varieties of mind viruses that have infected you, consciously or unconsciously. They're generally an unintended excuse as opposed to a legitimate explanation for not doing the things you want to do. Accept the belief that you're lacking the energy to make significant changes in your life, and you latch onto a flimsy, albeit very effective, strategy for maintaining some pretty slovenly habits. You can hang on to any old and comfortable behavior pattern by using the tiredness excuse. I'd love to get into shape, but I'm simply too exhausted to do what's required. Or, I want to become qualified for that new position, but I'm just too fatigued to go to school at night. The belief in your non-energy becomes self-fulfilling until you have to rest again, because coming up with excuses is a very tiring practice. The low-energy excuse is simply what I've seen myself and many others employ when we don't know how to overcome our own inertia, and I found that when we really put it to the test, it doesn't hold up. I've seen an absence of energy turn into an avalanche of high energy in just an instant. When my children used to complain about being bored or too tired to move, for instance, all it took was a suggestion that we visit the water park, or go shopping for a new bicycle, or do anything that they perceived to be fun, and they'd miraculously convert from weary to excited in a split second. And so it goes with all of us. We use the "I don't have the energy" excuse as a reason to hold on to an inert and pathetic way of being. The antidote to this is to find a way to inject energetic thoughts into your everyday thinking. One of John F. Kennedy's biographers, Arthur M. Schlesinger Jr., quoted the former president as saying, quote, "I suppose if you had to choose just one quality to have, that would be it, vitality," unquote. Vitality isn't simply the amount of high-energy atoms you have swirling around inside of you. I consider it a way of thinking. You can learn to overcome the ennui of low-energy thinking and replace it with a way of processing the world that serves you in a positive, life-fulfilling way. Low energy is by and large not a problem of body chemistry. It's a function of a long history of habituated thinking that needs excuses to stay the same. You can learn to practice more satisfying and vibrant thinking that will elevate your enthusiasm and ultimately produce an energetic lifestyle filled with purpose, no matter what your chronological age. You have the power to use your thoughts to elevate yourself to new levels of success, happiness, and health. Excuses Be Gone thinking encourages you to spend your daily moments in aliveness, free of the old tiredness routine. Refuse to cater to low-energy mental activity. Be determined to unquestionably place your thoughts not on what you can't do, but on what you intend to create. Stay in this mindset, and you'll never want to use the low-energy excuse again. Maintain your high-energy consciousness for what you want to accomplish, and watch it filter down to everyone you communicate with. High energy is infectious, and it originates with vital thinking that replaces these old mind viruses. Excuse number 16. It's my personal family history. You've always had a place in your family, and regardless of your opinion about it, there's nothing you can do to change that. If you were the youngest and always ordered around, that's simply the condition of your early life. The fact is that your birth order, being an only, oldest, or middle child, or any other familial sequencing, including being part of a blended family, having divorced or single parents, being adopted, having alcoholic parents, being of a low socioeconomic status, being racially mixed, or any of an endless combination of factors in your situation, it's all in the past and it's all over. Your relatives did what they did, given the circumstances of their life. Acknowledge this, and then move into the present moments of life. Look at your family history as a blessing. Yeah, a blessing. It's precisely what you had to go through to arrive where you are today. The manner in which you were treated or even mistreated provided you with an opportunity to be a stronger, more self-reliant person. Early experiences aren't meant to be hidden behind when life isn't working out the way you want it to. They aren't reasons for staying stuck. But the family history excuse has a huge following, so you have lots of company if you're using it to explain to yourself and others why you aren't who or what you want to be today. The divorce that took place when you were a young child may have taught you many important life lessons, but more likely, you caught the cultural mind virus that goes something like this. Coming from a broken family is a traumatic experience that causes irreparable damage to children. A part of you believes and promotes this meme because it seems easier than exploring the pain that leads to a healthier and stronger mindset. This part of you probably thinks that it's protecting you from that extremely painful childhood experience. Thus, you readily believe, chances are almost zero, that I'll have a happy relationship after seeing how miserably my parents failed at their own marriage. You can change all of this by reminding yourself that you absolutely have the power to elevate your attitude and beliefs. Consciously take time to reimagine the family experiences you had in the early years of your life, regardless of how traumatic or troublesome they were at the time. You didn't have the unquestionable ability as a child to make peace with them, but you do now. Be in a state of appreciation and gratitude for the parts of you that survived and still want to grow. Encourage them by refusing to settle for the easy out of excuses. For example, the years I spent in foster homes gave me life experiences that helped me to teach self-reliance to millions of people. Watching my stepfather drink himself to death, along with living with the effects that alcoholism has on a family, was, and still is, a great lesson that keeps me on the path of sobriety today. The presence of scarcity and food shortages as a child gave me an appreciation for all that has come to me, and I can now assure the poverty-conscious part of me that was then, and this is now. Excuses Be Gone encourages you to make peace with everything that transpired in your life, including the painful experiences of abuse, abandonment, and even disrespect. By hanging on to these lifelong self-defeating thinking habits, you do yourself the following major disservices. First, you get weaker and sicker. Your biography can become your biology. That is, by hanging on to old hurts or remembrances, you keep yourself in a place of attracting disease into your body. All of that anger, hatred, and anxiety is a vibrational match to the presence of serious illness. It's the law of attraction at work. If you think about what's missing or what you disliked about your early life, the universe will offer experiences that match what you're thinking. More of what was missing and what you disliked will continue to flow into your life in the form of disease. And secondly, you remain stuck in the past. If you can't elevate the thoughts about your past that are causing you to remain unhappy, unsuccessful, and unhealthy, you stay stuck where you are. Keeping unfortunate memories from the past alive with remnants of the originating anger, hate, and sadness becomes a habituated way of processing life. For example, if you hated how your father didn't pay enough attention to you and you use this to explain your adult self-consciousness, you're stuck in that long-held belief pattern. You have the unquestionable ability today to elevate your consciousness, to explore ways to relieve self-consciousness and attract people you want to be with, rather than continuing to explain to yourself that you can't attract those people because your father didn't pay enough attention to you. Remember, your life is happening now, in this present moment. Excuse number 17, I'm too busy. Prior to creating this excuse catalog that I'm now recording, I invited visitors to my website to email me their excuses for not living at the highest levels. In essence, I was interested in the excuses they have used in their lives. Quote, I'm too busy, unquote, easily topped the list. If you're overextended, know that you've chosen to be in this position. All of the activities of your life, including those that take up huge portions of your time, are simply the result of the choices you make. If your family responsibilities are problematic, you've opted to prioritize your life in this way. If your calendar is crammed, you've decided to live with a full schedule. If there are way too many small details that only you can handle, then this again is a choice you've made. Surely, one of the major purposes of life is to be happy. If you're using the excuse that you're too busy to be happy, you've made a choice to be busy, and in the process, you've copped out on living your life on purpose. If you substituted being busy for actively and happily fulfilling your destiny, you need to re-examine your priorities. Here is my mentor, Henry David Thoreau, on unexamined priorities. Quote, most men or women are engaged in businesses the greater part of their lives because the soul abhors a vacuum and they have not discovered any continuous employment for man's nobler faculties. Unquote. Don't let your soul languish in an unfilled vacuum. Instead, begin to examine just how you prioritize your life. All the details that occupy it keep you from a destiny that you're aware wants your attention. Contemplate these encouraging ideas to encounter the I'm too busy excuse. First, I know that I'm not a bad parent if I don't arrange my life to be available to chauffeur the children every day until they're adults. Secondly, I'm allowed to say no to requests that keep me from having time to pursue my life purpose. Third, there's no such thing as a place for everything and everything in its place. Four, there's no right way to do anything. And five, I can have it my way because there are no absolute universal rules. It isn't my purpose to delineate all of the ways in which you can unload this excuse category. Practicing delegating, getting others to help out, and taking time for yourself are all possibilities as well. Thoreau is right in that there are nobler faculties you need to pay attention to, in addition to all of those other details that occupy your life. If you fear the part of your soul that's calling you to a higher place, then you'll probably continue to haul out this particular excuse. Change this pattern by never saying or implying that you're too busy. Just drop it and replace it with the following affirmation. I intend to take time for myself, to live the life that I came here to live, and to do it without ignoring my responsibilities as a parent, a spouse, or employee. I learned this valuable technique from the great Vietnamese spiritual bodhisattva Thich Nhat Hanh in his book, Peace is Every Step. Recite these two lines anytime you can steal a few minutes from your daily schedule. Quote, breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I smile. Unquote. As Hahn writes, quote, breathing in, I calm my body. Reciting this line is like drinking a glass of cool lemonade on a hot day. You can feel the coolness permeate your body. Breathing out, I smile. Wearing a smile on your face is a sign that you are a master of yourself. Unquote. This simple exercise helps you to prioritize your life with a sense of peace. Then you can look at precisely what it is you need to do in order to discard the busyness excuse. There's a wonderful cartoon posted on the bulletin board at the yoga studio in Lahaina, Maui that I frequent that summarizes the importance of saying be gone to this popular excuse. Underneath the depiction of a doctor talking to an overweight patient, the caption reads, quote, what fits your busy schedule better, exercising 1 hour a day or being dead 24 hours a day? Unquote. That sums up my approach to this particular excuse. Practice elevating your thoughts every day, no matter how busy and important you are. Rather than insisting that you're too busy to exercise, for example, think, I exercise because I'm way too busy to take time for being sick. Excuse number 18, I'm too scared. Again, turning to my email correspondents, here's what else they've told me. Quote, I've always been afraid of being alone. I'm scared of failing, and I've been this way since I was a child. It's a scary world, and someone could hurt me. I'm afraid something bad will happen to me or my family. I'm afraid that someone will yell at me, and I can't handle criticism. And I'm scared about being poor or losing my job and not being able to get another one. Clearly, fear is a biggie in the excuse catalog. A way out of the I'm too scared thought pattern is offered in A Course in Miracles. I have a special love for this weighty tome that tells us that there are only two emotions we can experience, love and fear. Anything that is love cannot be fear, and anything that is fear cannot be love. If we can find our way to stay in a space of love, particularly for ourselves, then fear is an impossibility. I believe that fear is a mind virus that insists that you're either a success or a failure, and it's passed from one mind to another until it becomes a habit from an early age. You're taught to feel, if I don't succeed at everything I attempt, then I'm a failure as a person, and I'm scared to death of having to live with such an awful label. This virus is passed on to you from other minds who bought into the same logic, and it keeps on replicating, infiltrating, and spreading until it becomes a habitual way of responding. You think fearful thoughts, and then you use those same thoughts to explain the deficiencies of your life. You act as if they're really true, when in fact, they're nothing more than excuses. Franklin D. Roosevelt's famous refrain from his first inaugural address, quote, "the only thing we have to fear is fear itself," unquote, was crafted from Thoreau and his observation that, quote, "nothing is so much to be feared as fear," unquote. These Tao men had it right. There really is nothing to be afraid of. When you begin applying the excuses be gone paradigm, you'll find in part three of this program, neither this nor any of the excuses in this chapter will hold up. Here's a personal example. In the practice of Bikram yoga, which is a regular part of my life, there are two postures that require the practitioner to bend all the way over backward and hold the posture for a period of 30 seconds or so. When I first started this practice, I'd feel fear welling up in me as I attempted to grab my heels from a kneeling position. I remember saying to my instructor, quote, "I just can't bend over backward. I feel as if I'm out of control. In fact, I've never even been able to do a backward dive into a swimming pool in my entire life," unquote. I had a great meme going here which told me, going backwards is scary. You'll lose control. You won't be able to see where you're going. You could fall. You could really hurt yourself, and so forth. Each of these explanations was an excuse that kept me from mastering these new poses. My fear was rooted in my absence of trust in myself based on a lifetime of mind viruses. When I shifted my mind from fear to love, however, a remarkable thing happened that freed me from the chains of that habituated thinking. I saw myself cradled in the arms of a loving presence. I then said something to myself that I'd never uttered before. "Wayne, you can do these two exercises. You are a divine piece of the all-knowing intelligence. First, love yourself and trust in this wisdom, and then let go and let God." By moving to love, fear was impossible, and 60-plus years of excuse-making went out the window. Today, I enjoy demonstrating both the camel and fixed firm postures for new students. Out of all 26 postures, these two give me the greatest sense of joy and accomplishment. As the saying goes, fear knocked on the door, love answered, and no one was there. Here's a recap for each of the 18 most commonly used excuses that I've delineated here. The affirmations will assist you in making a conscious effort to encourage yourself to elevate your beliefs unquestionably. Going back now, here's number one. It will be difficult. Affirmation. I have the ability to accomplish any task I set my mind to with ease and comfort. Number two. It's going to be risky. Affirmation. Being myself involves no risk. It is my ultimate truth, and I live it fearlessly. Number three. It will take a long time. Affirmation. I have infinite patience when it comes to fulfilling my destiny. Number four. There will be family drama. Affirmation. I would rather be loathed for who I am than loved for who I am not. Number five. I don't deserve it. Affirmation. I am a divine creation, a piece of God, therefore I cannot be undeserving. Number six. It's not my nature. Affirmation. My essential nature is perfect and faultless. It is to this nature that I return. Number seven. I can't afford it. Affirmation. I am connected to an unlimited source of abundance. Number eight. No one will help me. Affirmation. The right circumstances and the right people are already here and will show up on time. Number nine. It has never happened before. Affirmation. I am willing to attract all that I desire, beginning here and now. Number 10. I'm not strong enough. Affirmation. I have access to unlimited assistance. My strength comes from my connection to my source of being. Number 11. I'm not smart enough. Affirmation. I am a creation of the divine mind. All is perfect, and I am a genius in my own right. Number 12. I'm too old or not old enough. Affirmation. I am an infinite being. The age of my body has no bearing on what I do or who I am. Number 13. The rules won't let me. Affirmation. I live my life according to divine rules. Number 14. It's too big. Affirmation. I think only about what I can do now. By thinking small, I accomplish great things. Number 15. I don't have the energy. Affirmation. I feel passionately about my life, and this passion fills me with excitement and energy. Number 16. It's my personal family history. Affirmation. I live in the present moment by being grateful for all of my life experiences as a child. Number 17. I'm too busy. Affirmation. As I unclutter my life, I free myself to answer the callings of my soul. Number 18. I'm too scared. Affirmation. I can accomplish anything I put my mind to because I know that I am never alone. This concludes part one. You've identified 18 of the most common excuses and have been introduced to reasons for removing habituated thoughts that have been holding you back from living life at the highest levels of success, happiness, and health. Now in part two, you'll find the seven principles that lead to a lifetime of no excuses.